Okay, let's unpack this. Sometimes you encounter a career so incredibly diverse, so eclectic, it really makes you stop and wonder, how does one person manage to do all of that?
Right.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into the fascinating world of Blaine Knage, a truly multi-talented individual who has not only graced the stage as a stand-up comedian, but also sharpened his pen as a sketchwriter, commanded attention as a game show host, brought the house down as a wrestling announcer, infused energy into roller derby, and even jumped into the fantastical realm of podcasting.
Wow.
He's a chameleon of comedy, really. And his journey offers some remarkable insights, I think.
It's true. And the sources we've gathered, you know, from biographical details, historical records of his shows, references to his various projects, they paint a picture of a career that truly defies easy categorization. It just doesn't fit neatly in a box. Our mission today is really to connect these seemingly disparate dots to understand not just the incredible range of projects he's been involved with, but to truly grasp how he's managed to maintain such a vibrant, varied, and frankly, enduring presence.
Yeah, enduring is the word.
Right, and in the demanding world of comedy and entertainment for decades, it's an exploration of adaptability, resilience, and maybe the enduring power of just having a unique comedic voice.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener?
Hmm.
You know, someone who values gaining knowledge quickly and appreciates those aha moments.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to get a shortcut, essentially, to understanding a really unique professional journey. We'll uncover insights into how talent can not only adapt, but truly thrive across vastly different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? You might even find some unexpected inspiration for navigating your own path, especially in a world that, let's face it, often demands narrow specialization.
That's a great point.
So get ready for some surprising facts and hopefully a deeper understanding of a truly one-of-a-kind comedic force. Let's start right at the very beginning then, rooting ourselves in the humble origins of Blaine Knage. He was born Blaine Harold Knage, September 19, 1965, in York, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And grew up in the much smaller, kind of quintessential American town of Dallastown. This isn't your typical Hollywood origin story, is it? We're talking about a very grounded, almost archetypal, small-town American upbringing.
Definitely.
What's particularly interesting, according to our sources, is that his father owned and operated a barbershop right there in Dallastown.
Oh, interesting.
You just have to imagine what kind of rich tapestry of stories and characters a kid growing up around a barbershop would encounter daily.
Absolutely. Think about that environment.
Yeah. Think about it for a moment.
Yeah.
A barbershop isn't just a place for haircuts, right? It's like a true micro-community.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. A hub.
A stage for local gossip, for impromptu philosophical debates, for everyday dramas, and, you know, for unique personalities to truly shine. It's an informal storytelling hub.
Yeah.
A place where people often let their guard down, sharing bits of their lives, their opinions, their woes, their triumphs.
All unfiltered.
Totally unfiltered. For a young, impressionable mind, particularly one with maybe a nascent comedic bent, this kind of environment could be an absolute goldmine of observational material.
Oh, completely. It's like a natural real-world school for comedy.
It really is. It's a natural, unfiltered school for understanding human foibles, for recognizing the rhythm of conversation, and for learning about the unexpected turns a seemingly mundane story can take. It's a very tactile, grounded way to absorb the world before ever stepping onto a larger, more formal stage.
That's such an astute observation about the barbershop. It really highlights how a seemingly ordinary environment could, in fact, be a profoundly foundational experience for a developing comedian. You know, the constant influx of different personalities, the casual banter, the often exaggerated local humor, all of this would be like a real-time masterclass in human nature.
Right. You're just soaking it all in.
Exactly. It's where you learn the subtle art of listening, of picking up on idiosyncratic speech patterns, and understanding what makes people laugh in an everyday context, not just on a stage.
Hmm.
Imagine the recurring characters, the daily rituals, the unwritten rules of social interaction played out right in front of him. This kind of organic, unfiltered exposure to diverse perspectives and ways of speaking can truly hone a unique ear for dialogue and comedic timing, providing a raw authenticity that's, well, it's hard to replicate in a formal training setting.
You can't really teach that, can you?
Not in the same way. It's where you might discover the unexpected punchline in a neighbor's anecdote or the inherent humor in everyday situations. It really makes me wonder if some of his later observational humor or even his ability to connect with diverse audiences has its roots in these formative barbershop years. almost like an informal, ongoing writer's room.
Huh, yeah, like he's collecting material without even realizing it.
Precisely. Where he began to unconsciously collect material and develop his own unique way of seeing and interpreting the world around him.
Moving beyond those incredibly rich hometown influences, Blaine Kapatch went on to graduate from Dallastown Area High School in 1983.
Okay.
And subsequently attended York College of Pennsylvania. This really stands out because it isn't necessarily the traditional immediate sprint to the bright lights of L.A. or New York that we often hear about from aspiring comedians, you know?
Not at all.
We frequently encounter narratives of individuals dropping out of school to chase their dreams in a major city, or maybe pursuing highly specialized performance arts degrees from day one.
Mm-hmm.
But here, we observe a more conventional educational trajectory, at least initially. It makes you reflect on the sheer variety of routes one can take to a creative career.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't immediately throwing himself into the shark tank of the major comedy scenes. Instead, he took a step-by-step approach, completing his education.
Which might suggest a more methodical nature, maybe.
Perhaps. Or perhaps it was simply a desire to complete what he started, to gain a broader base of knowledge before fully committing to the often unpredictable and, let's face it, volatile world of entertainment.
That makes sense.
This grounded educational background, coupled with his barbershop observations, could have subtly yet profoundly influenced his comedic style, maybe endowing him with a broader perspective, a more relatable angle on everyday life.
Or even just a more patient approach to developing his craft, as opposed to someone who jumps straight into the intense, often insular world of professional comedy from a very young age.
Right, right. That intensity can shape you differently.
Exactly. Many comedians, driven by ambition and the desire for immediate exposure, often head straight to major metropolitan centers like New York or Los Angeles right out of high school or even before, you know, to immerse themselves in the established comedy clubs and networks.
The traditional path, so to speak.
Right. What's particularly intriguing about Blaine Kapatch, though, is that he began his stand-up career in Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, okay. Not L.A. or New York.
Nope. At the Charm City Comedy Club, starting in 1985. This suggests a more regional, grassroots beginning. It allowed him to build and refine his craft away from the immediate, often overwhelming pressures and intense competition of the larger, more saturated comedy hubs.
So, like, a proving ground?
Kind of. This choice provided him with a crucial opportunity to develop his unique voice, experiment with material, and gain invaluable stage experience in a somewhat less intimidating yet still competitive environment. It really speaks to a different kind of incubation period for his talent.
Mm-hmm. Learning the ropes locally.
Exactly. Learning in a local scene typically allows for more frequent stage time, more direct and consistent feedback from a regular audience, and the invaluable space to truly find one's comedic rhythm and persona without the constant scrutiny of industry gatekeepers.
That makes a lot of sense. Less pressure, more reps.
Precisely. It's a space where a comedian can develop their fundamental skills, their crowd work, their storytelling prowess with fewer distractions. And that often leads to a more robust, authentic, and enduring stage presence in the long run. He built a solid foundation before seeking broader national recognition.
Now, here's where Blaine Kapatch's journey takes a truly fascinating turn, revealing a different dimension of his talent. Before he became a familiar face on television, Kapatch was a writer.
Right, behind the scenes first.
And not just any writer. Our sources confirm he worked as a sketch writer in the early foundational years of MADTV.
Wow, early MADTV, that's significant.
Totally. And what really jumps out at you from this period is that he did this alongside his then comedy partner, Patton Oswalt.
Whoa, okay, that's a powerhouse duo for early sketch comedy.
Isn't it? MADTV launched in the mid-90s, offering a distinctly edgier, often more character-driven and satirical alternative to shows like Saturday Night Live.
Definitely had its own flavor.
To be involved in its formative stages, especially collaborating closely with someone like Patton Oswalt, who, as we know, later became this highly respected and celebrated stand-up actor, writer.
Yeah, huge talent.
It just speaks volumes about Kapatch's intrinsic comedic talent and his ability to craft compelling and genuinely funny sketches right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Working on a show like MADTV would have demanded not only a razor-sharp wit, but also a profound understanding of character development, sophisticated comedic timing.
And collaboration. Intense pressure, too. Weekly show.
Absolutely. That ability to work collaboratively under intense pressure to produce weekly content, This early experience wouldn't just be about generating isolated jokes. It would be about building entire comedic worlds, creating memorable characters, developing recurring bits.
All crucial skills.
All crucial skills for any long-lasting comedic career, particularly one as varied as his turned out to be.
It's absolutely pivotal to understand that early collaboration with Patton Oswalt on MADTV. As you mentioned, MADTV forged its identity by leaning into distinct, character-driven sketches and a brand of humor that was often edgier, more satirical, sometimes more absurd than its contemporaries.
Right.
Being part of that foundational writing team strongly suggests Cuthatch possessed a really strong, distinct comedic voice from the outset, coupled with, you know, an innate ability to craft diverse characters and scenarios that would appeal to a broad yet very specific audience.
Yeah, they had a definite vibe.
They did. This wasn't merely about generating one-off jerks. It was about the architectural process of building recurring segments, developing consistent character voices, and understanding the intricate structure of a sketch that could land effectively week after week.
A real craft.
A real craft. This formative experience in sketch writing would have undoubtedly honed his versatility, his quick wit, his capacity for rapid idea generation skills that are absolutely invaluable and transferable across virtually any entertainment format. And the collaborative nature of a television writing room, especially one as dynamic and creatively charged as MADTV's, would also teach him crucial lessons in iterating on ideas, incorporating feedback, contributing to a larger comedic vision.
While still keeping your own voice.
Exactly. All while maintaining his individual flair and ensuring his comedic voice was heard. It's like a foundational masterclass in comedic craftsmanship.
And the incredible range of his writing didn't stop with MADTV. Our sources reveal a truly impressive list of writing gigs, spanning just a wide spectrum of comedic styles.
Okay, like what else?
We're talking about The Martin Short Show.
Character stuff.
Right. Blue-collar TV.
More mainstream observational.
The Jamie Kennedy Experiment.
Hidden Camera. Pranks.
Mind of Mencia.
Edgy social commentary, sometimes controversial.
Web Soup, and even Comedy Central's roast of Roseanne Barr, amongst others.
Wow, okay. That is a serious range.
Just consider that for a moment.
Yeah.
Moving effortlessly from the character-driven impressions of Martin Short to the, you know, the blue-collar humor, the pranks, the social commentary, internet culture, and then the incredibly specific, often brutal, art of the celebrity roast.
Each one demands a totally different approach.
Profoundly different. The Martin Short Show would lean heavily on creating distinct personas, right? Thinking like a chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
Mind of Mencia dealt with pointed social commentary, pushed boundaries, writing for Comedy Central roast that demands a completely different comedic muscle altogether.
Oh, yeah. Sharp, targeted jabs. Gotta land those punches.
Exactly. Funny, but sometimes insightful, too. This sheer breadth of experience demonstrates a truly remarkable versatility, unequivocally proving he was not a one-trick pony.
Not at all.
He could adapt his writing voice, his perspective, his joke structure to fit vastly diverse comedic formats, showing a deep, nuanced understanding of what makes different audiences laugh.
And how to write for specific performers, too. That's key.
Absolutely. For specific performers, specific purposes, specific comedic environments.
That extensive resume as a writer is indeed a powerful testament to his exceptional adaptability. And it gives us a vital piece of the puzzle in understanding his entire career arc. You're right. Writing for a celebrity roast, for instance, requires a completely different comedic muscle and mindset than crafting sketches for Martin Short.
Totally different skills.
A roast demands concision, sharp edges, often irreverence, and that unique ability to find humor in someone's flaws or public persona, all while maintaining a tone and respecting the structure.
Right. It's a specific art form.
It really is.
Yeah.
Sketch comedy, conversely, might require more intricate character development, narrative arcs, different setup and payoff over several minutes. His work on shows like Blue Collar TV or Jamie Kennedy would have tapped into different sensibilities, altogether mainstream observational humor, or the plotting needed for Hidden Camera stuff. This incredible body of work demonstrates not just an ability to generate humor, but to tailor it precisely to specific formats, performers, target audiences.
That adaptability is the thread, isn't it?
It's absolutely key to understanding the sheer longevity and impressive breadth of his career. He's not just a performer delivering lines. He's a true craftsman, an architect of comedy itself, capable of shaping narratives, jokes, entire comedic frameworks behind the scenes for a multitude of purposes and platforms. It's a testament to a deep, almost intellectual understanding of the mechanics of laughter.
Okay, so transitioning from his prolific work behind the scenes, Many of you might recognize Blaine Kopach at best from his time squarely in front of the camera, hosting season 2 of the Comedy Central game show, Beat the Geeks.
Ah, yes, Beat the Geeks, I remember that.
It originally aired on the Comedy Channel from 2001 to 2002. Just picture that premise.
Yeah.
A comedic quiz show. It immediately begs the question, how does a comedian take that traditionally structured, sometimes earnest format and truly make it his own?
Yeah, because a typical host just reads the questions, keeps score.
Exactly.
Hmm.
But a comedian, a seasoned stand-up,
mm.
brings a whole different layer of pressure and, more importantly, opportunity. They're not just facilitating, they're expected to entertain.
Mm-hmm. React on the fly.
Inject their personality.
Right.
Kopach wasn't merely a scorekeeper, he became the central figure, the engine of comedic energy for the show.
And his background would have been perfect for that.
Absolutely crucial. Stand-up teaches you how to command a stage, read an audience, deliver punchlines. Sketch writing teaches character, structure, navigating scenarios.
Right.
So on Beat the Geeks, he wasn't just reading questions dryly. He was performing, responding instantly to answers, playfully challenging the geeks' expertise.
Those geeks were great characters, too.
They were. And he expertly managed the whole dynamic of a live-to-tape production. He became an integral part of the show's identity, transforming trivia into something genuinely funny and engaging.
It's the inherent concept itself, a comedic quiz show hosted by a comedian, that's so genuinely fascinating here. This isn't just about reading questions efficiently. It's about adeptly navigating the humor that arises from trivia, from the contestant struggles, and from the specific personas of the resident geeks.
Right, finding the funny in the game itself.
Exactly. This role demanded not just a competent host, but a quick-witted master of ceremonies who could consistently keep the energy high and the jokes flowing, all without ever overshadowing the game or making contestants feel bad.
A tricky balance.
A very tricky balance. His stand-up background provided that stage presence, confidence, improvisational skill to react spontaneously. Simultaneously, his sketchwriting experience gave him that understanding of structure, character interplay, how to craft a joke that lands.
So the perfect mix of skills for that particular job.
A potent combination. It allowed him to elevate the game show format far beyond mere Q&A, transforming it into a truly engaging and often uproarious comedic performance. It's a delicate, high-wire act.
And what's truly remarkable is the scale of the show's success. Beat the Geeks reached an impressive 130 episodes.
Wow, 130? That's a lot for cable, then.
That, for any cable show, let alone a comedic quiz show in the early 2000s, is a significant and sustained run. Cable shows often had much shorter seasons, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So hitting 130 episodes is a clear indicator of consistent popularity, a format that genuinely resonated. It's no easy feat to keep an audience engaged for that many installments, especially a quiz show.
Needs that dynamic host.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And its reach extended far beyond the United States. Our sources confirm it saw international broadcast in Canada and New Zealand after its original run.
Oh, interesting. So it traveled well.
That, to me, speaks to a pretty universal appeal, doesn't it? It suggests that this specific brand of humor, his hosting style, the concept, it translated remarkably well across different cultural sensibilities.
Yeah, that's a huge marker of success.
It really is. This kind of international reach strongly indicates that Kopach's unique charm, his quick wit, his engaging presence, had a broad cross-cultural appeal. It truly cemented his reputation.
Not just as a writer anymore.
Exactly. Not just a talented writer, but a recognizable, beloved, and highly capable on-screen personality capable of carrying a daily program.
Indeed, the milestone of 130 episodes and subsequent international syndication are profoundly strong indicators of the show's, and particularly Kopach's, enduring and widespread appeal. It tells us that his hosting style, which appears to have masterfully blended genuine interest in the trivia and the contestants with perfectly timed comedic interjections, it successfully resonated across diverse cultures and demographics.
It wasn't just niche American humor.
No, it implies a more universal comedic language, an ability to find the humor in common human experiences that he was able to tap into effectively. This success was instrumental in cementing his reputation, not merely as a talented writer working behind the scenes, but as a charismatic, capable, and highly engaging presence fully able to lead a daily television program.
Mm-hmm.
It truly showcased his ability to connect directly with a wide and diverse audience, holding their attention, providing consistent entertainment over an extended period. The show's popular success proved unequivocally that he could command the screen.
a really significant step in his public career.
Absolutely. Marking a significant and public evolution from his earlier, primarily behind-the-scenes writing roles.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? What is it specifically about a comedian hosting a game show that makes it so compelling, so irresistible for the audience? Especially for you, our listener, who enjoys these kinds of insights into media and performance.
Yeah, what's the magic ingredient?
It's fundamentally not just about getting the answers right or even about the thrill of victory. It's about the entire journey, the dynamic banter, the unexpected moments, the playful tension.
All brought to life by the host's personality.
Exactly. All masterfully brought to life by someone with the unique skill set of a comedian like Kapadj. You tune in for the laughs as much as you do for the outcome. A comedian injects an unparalleled level of personality and spontaneity into what could otherwise be a rather dry procession of questions and answers, transforms it into something lively, unpredictable, genuinely humorous.
They can riff on wrong answers, tease the contestants.
Playfully tease, exactly. Engage with the geeks, make self-deprecating jokes. All these elements create a much more engaging, much more human, and significantly more entertaining experience than a straightforward host might provide.
Finding the humor in the challenge itself.
That's it. Finding the humor, the absurdity, the shared human experience within the competition, which is precisely what a skilled comedian is uniquely positioned and trained to do.
That's a crucial point, and it leads us to a fascinating question. How exactly does a stand-up comedian, deeply accustomed to solo performance and direct audience control, how do they adapt to the inherent constraints and specific rhythms of a game show? While still managing to maintain their authentic, unique comedic voice, it requires a remarkably specific and finely tuned set of skills.
Definitely not easy.
First, they need to be both structured, adhering to the rules, timing, breaks, and simultaneously highly improvisational, ready to react with instant wit.
Juggling act.
Totally. They must expertly facilitate the game, keep it moving, while at the very same time entertaining the audience with their wit and personality. It is an incredibly delicate and demanding balance between focusing on the contestant's quest for victory and the audience's insatiable desire for laughter.
Yeah.
This specific role on Beat the Geeks truly highlights Kapadj's incredible versatility. It powerfully demonstrates that his comedic talent isn't confined to a single format, but possesses the inherent capacity to elevate almost any medium, even one as seemingly rigid as a quiz show.
That's a great way to put it. Elevates the medium.
It requires a profound mastery of comedic timing, deep intuitive understanding of audience engagement, and the singular ability to inject humor authentically and spontaneously without ever derailing the game.
Okay, now hold on to your hats, folks, because we're about to explore perhaps the most wonderfully eccentric turn in his career.
Oh, sounds intriguing.
From game show host, Blaine Kapadj transitions to hosting a live burlesque and Mexican wrestling show.
Wait, what? Seriously.
Yes, you heard that right. Since 2002, Blaine Kapadj has been the vibrant, consistent host of Lucha Vavoom in Los Angeles, California.
Lucha Vavoom.
This, without exaggeration, sounds like an absolute explosion of genres. A vibrant, wonderfully chaotic, utterly unique blend of performance art.
Wow. Wrestling and burlesque together.
Just think about the sheer unbridled energy required for something like this. This isn't a polite studio audience. It's a raucous, engaged, highly participatory crowd ready for anything.
Completely different vibe.
Totally. He's not just introducing acts. He's dynamically setting the tone, hyping up the spectacle, weaving a narrative thread through the wild action, being a crucial part of the show's distinct atmosphere.
For over two decades.
He has been the consistent voice of this wild, eclectic, boundary-pushing event, which is an incredible testament to his innate ability to not only adapt, but to genuinely thrive in the most unconventional high-octane settings.
That's amazing longevity in something so niche.
It really is. This role demands a completely different kind of stage presence than a game show. More boisterous, more physical in its engagement with the action, deeply connected to the raw energy of a live audience experiencing something unique over the top.
And delightfully subversive, probably.
Exactly. He's essentially the comedic ringmaster for a beautiful, bizarre circus.
It's the sheer audacity of that blend, isn't it? Professional wrestling, burlesque, and comedy all seamlessly wrapped into one incredible live show.
It's hard to even picture.
It defines what a niche, high-energy, visually rich performance art can be. And it demands a master of ceremonies who can expertly tie all these seemingly disparate elements together into a cohesive, entertaining experience. For Kampach to have hosted this for over two decades speaks volumes about his profound ability to not only adapt to such unconventional formats, but to genuinely thrive and find his unique voice within them.
Yeah, he must be incredibly good at it.
His role as an announcer here would require incredibly sharp improvisational skills, boundless energy to match the frenetic spectacle, and a natural ability to narrate and enhance both the drama and the humor in real time.
Reacting to whatever happens in the ring.
Exactly. Reacting to unpredictable twists and turns. It's a world away from the controlled environment of a television studio, demanding a very different kind of stage presence. One that is perhaps more theatrical, more physically engaged with the action, far more adept at riding the unpredictable wave of audience excitement.
It highlights a fearlessness, really.
Absolutely. A fearlessness in embracing and mastering truly diverse and boundary-pushing performance opportunities. He's a crucial component of the controlled chaos.
And if being the voice of Lucha Vavum wasn't enough to demonstrate his love for high-energy niche live performance, consider this. Since 2005, he's also been a live announcer for the Los Angeles Derby Dolls.
Roller Derby now. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. A premier banked track, Roller Derby League. This is yet another incredibly dynamic, fast-paced, live-action environment that demands quick thinking, split-second reactions, and a consistent ability to keep up.
Banked track derby is intense.
Super intense. It's clear he's strongly drawn to performances that are raw, immediate, brimming with character, where his quick wit and remarkable ability to narrate and commentate on the fly can truly shine. Roller derby, with its unique rules, its colorful skater personalities, its intense physical action. It offers another incredibly rich canvas for a comedian.
Yeah, lots of potential for commentary there.
Right. Here, he's not just calling out scores or penalties dryly. He's actively shaping the narrative of the game, creating humor in the moment, making the sport even more accessible and entertaining for fans and newcomers alike.
Adding that comedic layer.
Exactly. This role further underscores his comfort and exceptional expertise in these niche, high-energy live performance spaces, where every show is a unique, unrepeatable experience.
It's fascinating how these choices in live performance reveal a pattern. Announcing for banked track roller derby, in particular, requires an exceptional ability to keep up with incredibly fast-paced action. To clearly explain complex rules, accurately call plays as they unfold, maintain excitement, all while consistently bringing a unique voice and his distinctive comedic flair.
It's a lot to juggle.
It is. For a comedian, this isn't just a job. It's a truly unique opportunity to infuse what could be purely technical commentary with sharp wit, personality, humorous observations, making the sport far more engaging.
More fun to watch, even if you don't know all the rules.
Precisely. It's about much more than simply reporting what's happening. It's about interpreting it through a comedic lens, highlighting the drama, the collisions, the occasional absurdity. This role powerfully underscores his capacity to be an active, integral part of the spectacle, rather than merely observing. He's not just a commentator. He's actively shaping the audience's experience.
Turning a sports event into a comedic performance.
In its own right, yeah. Further demonstrating his truly exceptional and multifaceted versatility.
Then, from 2008 to 2014, Kampach stepped back into a more traditional, albeit still innovative, stand-up setting. Hosting the weekly comedy show, What's Up, Tiger Lily, brilliantly created by Maria Bamford and Melinda Hill, in Los Angeles.
Ah, Bamford and Hill. Okay, so back to his roots in a way.
Exactly. This brings us back full circle to his roots in stand-up and live comedy. This wasn't just a one-off guest spot. It was a foundational role in the vibrant LA comedy scene, hosting a show that ran consistently for 6 years.
6 years is a long run for a weekly indie comedy show.
It really is. Being the host of a regular weekly show demands incredible consistency, sustained energy, and a finely tuned ability to warm up the crowd and expertly bridge between different acts, maintaining flow.
The host sets the whole tone.
Absolutely. It's in this setting that a comedian can continually hone their crowd work, try out new material, truly showcase their enduring stand-up chops. It serves as powerful proof that no matter how diverse his other ventures,
stand-up was still core.
Exactly. His roots in live stand-up comedy remain strong, central, a vital part of his comedic identity. Running such a long-standing show represents a steady, reliable presence in a notoriously fleeting industry.
Shows respect from his peers, too, hosting their show for so long.
Definitely highlights his reliability, his respected standing, and his continued relevance within the dynamic LA comedy circuit.
You're right. Hosting a weekly comedy show for 6 years in a vibrant, highly competitive scene like Los Angeles tells us a tremendous amount about his standing among his peers and within the industry. It signals a significant level of respect, professionalism, and an ongoing, vital connection to the heart of the stand-up community.
LA scene is tough.
It's a crucible for comedic talent, new acts emerging constantly. To be entrusted with hosting a show created by respected figures like Bamford and Hill, and to sustain it for 6 years truly speaks volumes. This is a subtly different kind of performance compared to headlining, too. It often involves not just delivering your own material, but expertly introducing other acts, managing the unpredictable flow of a multi-performer show, meticulously setting the tone for the entire evening.
Right, making sure everyone shines.
Exactly. Ensuring the audience is engaged from first laugh to last. This role powerfully demonstrates his ability to be both a compelling performer in his own right and also a highly skilled facilitator within the broader comedy world, showcasing his generosity as an artist who can elevate others while maintaining his own undeniable comedic presence.
And just to underscore the enduring strength of his stand-up roots, our sources note that he appeared in The Comedians of Comedy, live at the Troubadour, in 2007.
Ah, Comedians of Comedy. That was a big deal.
A truly notable and iconic event that showcased the burgeoning alternative comedy voices of the era, a movement that brought a distinctly different sensibility to stand-up.
More observational, surreal, character-driven.
Right, less traditional setup punchline. Appearing at the Troubadour, an iconic venue, as part of such a well-regarded, influential showcase, that's a significant career milestone.
Huge validation.
It means he was not only recognized for his unique talent, but was actively considered an integral part of a specific, influential wave of comedic innovation.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks volumes about his enduring relevance in the stand-up world, even as he was simultaneously exploring and excelling in so many other diverse avenues.
Kept his stand-up sharp.
Absolutely. This appearance is a powerful statement that his core stand-up talent, his unique perspective, his comedic voice were sharp enough, respected enough, to be featured prominently alongside some of the era's most respected and groundbreaking comedic minds. He clearly maintained his edge.
You've hit on a critical point. Appearing in Comedians of Comedy would unequivocally place him alongside some of the most influential and respected alternative comedians of that era. This wasn't just another show. It was a cultural touchstone that powerfully highlighted a burgeoning, groundbreaking scene redefining stand-up. It signifies profound peer recognition and strongly highlights that despite his incredibly diverse ventures, TV, live events, writing, his stand-up presence and unique comedic voice remained incredibly sharp, highly relevant, and deeply regarded within the industry.
It's a powerful testament to his consistent standing.
Definitely. Demonstrating a dedication to his original craft. It shows that even while immersed in game shows, wrestling announcing, roller derby, he continued to meticulously hone and proudly showcase his original comedic craft.
The foundation was always there.
Always at the ready, constantly evolving, proving his comedic identity was robust enough to transcend multiple formats and maintain its integrity and impact across varied stages.
Okay, fast forward to the modern era of media. And it's no surprise that Blaine Cabbie Patch is right there, embracing and excelling on new platforms.
Makes sense given his adaptability.
Since November 28, 2012, he's been a key participant in a podcast called Nerd Poker, hosted by Brian Post.
Nerd Poker, D&D podcasting.
Exactly. A Dungeons & Dragons podcast, a whole different universe of collaborative storytelling and sustained improvisation.
That requires a totally different skill set again.
It really does. Podcasts, especially narrative or role-playing ones like D&D, demand unique skills. It's not visual gags or physical comedy. It's purely audio.
Compelling voice acting, character development.
Sustained ability to improvise within a fictional framework, often with unpredictable dice rolls dictating twists. This shift to a long-form audio medium vividly showcases his adaptability to the evolving digital landscape.
And his willingness to dive into niche subcultures.
Absolutely, with enthusiasm. It's collaborative storytelling at its finest, where humor arises organically from character interactions, unexpected turns of fate.
Way often with Posen steering the ship.
Right. It requires a different kind of comedic stamina, sustained imaginative engagement, deep understanding of long-form character commitment. Proving his versatility extends seamlessly into the imaginative world of audio.
That shift to a long-form, audio-only format like Nerd Poker is profoundly fascinating. Participating in a D&D podcast requires a fundamentally different kind of comedic skill set compared to stand-up or sketch writing. It's about sustained collaborative storytelling, building a narrative with others over hours, even years, requiring consistent character work, pure improvisation, all without visual cues or a traditional live audience reaction.
Well, the dice rolls add that element of chance, too.
Absolutely. The magic often happens in the unexpected. Dice rolls introduce chance, forcing players to react creatively and comedically to sudden failures or surprising successes, turning potential dead ends into hilarious improv opportunities.
Yeah, finding the funny in the fail.
Exactly. This format showcases his profound ability to contribute meaningfully to an ongoing narrative and consistently create humor solely through dialogue, character interaction, quick-witted reactions over an extended period. It also allows him to reach an entirely new, deeply dedicated, highly engaged audience, the podcast listener.
Right, the intimate connection.
Who often forms a profound connection with the story and characters. It speaks volumes about the broadening landscape of comedy, where niche podcasts become significant platforms, demonstrating a versatile entertainer can find a home almost anywhere.
And just to show he hasn't abandoned his television roots, he also returned to his writing talents for TV during this period, proving that even as new media like podcasts emerged, traditional TV still needed his versatile talents.
Good point.
Carapace was a writer on Comedy Central's At Midnight, hosted by Chris Hardwick from 2013 to 2017.
Oh, yeah, At Midnight. Fast-paced show.
Totally. That show was all about quick wit, rapid-fire pop culture references, immediate reactions to social media trends, often responding to current events in real time.
Tailor-made for his writing background, in a way.
It really was. Mm-hmm. This role perfectly married his foundational writing skills honed on MED TV, roasts with the immediacy and frenetic pace of digital culture. Writing for At Midnight meant constantly being aware of what was trending online, what was funny right now.
Yeah, the turnaround must have been insane.
Crafting jokes and prompts that landed instantly with an audience deeply immersed in internet culture. An incredibly fast-paced, high-pressure environment demanding constant innovation, encyclopedic knowledge of contemporary humor.
Finger on the pulse.
Absolutely. It allowed him to bring his extensive experience to a very modern, internet-savvy format, further solidifying his relevance and demonstrating his continued mastery in a rapidly changing comedic landscape.
Writing for At Midnight was a particularly demanding role because it meant crafting jokes around rapidly changing current events, internet culture, social media trends, often with extremely fast turnarounds, sometimes even in real time.
That's intense.
This demands an extremely keen, almost prescient awareness of what's trending, what's about to trend, and an ability to generate punchlines and prompts that land effectively and immediately with a highly engaged, digitally savvy audience. It's a format that often required writers to anticipate online reactions, then shape a comedic response that felt both fresh and relatable.
Thinking like the internet.
Pretty much. This role perfectly combined his deep experience in sketch and roast writing concision, pointed humor, callbacks with the immediacy of digital media. It further underscores his remarkable adaptability and continued relevance, proving he can navigate both traditional TV and cutting-edge digital platforms with equal success.
A writer who truly understands the zeitgeist.
Exactly.
So when you pull back and look at his entire career path, what does this all mean? From small-town Pennsylvania roots to sketch writing rooms, game show hosting, wrestling announcing, roller derby, D&D podcasts.
It's quite the resume.
It's truly a wild, non-linear ride. You see someone who isn't afraid to step into completely different worlds, always finding a way to contribute his unique blend of humor and talent.
Mm.
But despite the wildly different settings, TV studio, roller derby track, podcast, there's an undeniable thread, a consistent through line binding these disparate experiences. It's not just about being present. It's about bringing a consistent, recognizable comedic voice and a specific, adaptable skill set to each one.
You've articulated that unifying thread perfectly. The undeniable, consistent through line across all of Blaine Carapace's incredibly diverse ventures is the expert and effective application of humor. Whether he's meticulously writing gags for a sketch, reacting spontaneously to contestants, theatrically hyping up a wrestling match,
calling roller derby action,
embodying a D&D character.
Yeah.
His unique comedic voice is consistently present, authentic, and remarkably adaptable. It's not just about being inherently funny, though he clearly is. It's about understanding how to deploy humor effectively within a vast array of contexts and for vastly different audiences.
Knowing the room, even if the room's virtual.
Exactly. This deep, almost intuitive understanding allows him to seamlessly transition between roles, always bringing that essential comedic spark and precision that defines his work, making him more than just a performer.
Like you said, a comedic architect.
A true comedic architect in every medium he touches.
He's been successful in so many different formats. Traditional TV, raw live niche events, audio podcasts, digital-first TV. That kind of adaptability, that sheer versatility, is truly remarkable, especially in an entertainment industry that often tries to pigeonhole talent into a very narrow category.
It really does.
He didn't just survive these industry shifts, he clearly thrived in them, often finding innovative new ways to utilize his skills.
He seems to actively seek out opportunities.
Right. No matter how unconventional the setting, where his particular brand of humor, quick thinking, a unique voice can engage an audience, this willingness to cross genres, explore new platforms, embrace diverse challenges is a profound testament to his creative resilience.
And a deep understanding that talent can be expressed in countless ways.
Not just the obvious or conventional ones.
His career truly serves as an incredibly insightful blueprint for modern entertainers, especially those navigating today's fragmented and rapidly shifting media landscape. In an industry constantly evolving, perpetually in flux, the ability to pivot seamlessly and effectively between different mediums, television, live performance, digital audio, it's not just an asset.
It's almost survival.
It's almost a fundamental necessity for sustained relevance and longevity. Blaine Kapatch's journey powerfully shows that an authentic, adaptable voice, coupled with a genuine willingness to explore new platforms and genres, it can lead to a remarkably rich, diverse, and enduring career. He consistently finds novel ways to connect with an audience, demonstrating that true comedic talent isn't bound by format or traditional expectations, but by ingenuity, relentless curiosity, and an unwavering commitment to making people laugh wherever and however they choose to consume entertainment.
It's about creative agility.
Perfectly put, creative agility.
So for you, our listener, someone who values gaining knowledge quickly and appreciates aha moments about unique career paths, what profoundly valuable lessons can we take from a career like this? It's unequivocally not a straight line. There's no obvious predetermined trajectory.
No neat path A to B to C.
Not at all. But it certainly seems to be a remarkably fulfilling one, full of surprising turns, unconventional choices, invaluable opportunities that he embraced wholeheartedly. His story powerfully suggests that sometimes the most interesting, innovative, and ultimately successful careers are built not by strictly adhering to a narrow blueprint,
but by following genuine curiosity.
Exactly. By saying yes to unconventional experiences, having the courage to forge your own path. It's a powerful lesson in the immense value of flexibility, embracing change.
And the idea that every diverse experience adds something.
Right. No matter how niche or seemingly disparate, it inherently contributes to a richer, more robust, more adaptable skill set. It builds a comedic muscle that can tackle anything.
That's a profound takeaway. It truly raises an important, almost philosophical question for anyone pursuing a creative path. Does accumulating such a vast array of diverse experiences ultimately make a performer more robust, more innovative, more inherently interesting and impactful?
You have to think so, right?
Blaine Kapatch's trajectory strongly suggests that each seemingly disparate role, from crafting jokes for MAD TV to announcing for Lucha Vavoom to the collaborative storytelling of Nerd Poker, likely enriched his comedic arsenal in profound, often unexpected ways. It didn't dilute his focus. It made him more dynamic, more adaptable, infinitely more capable of finding and creating humor in a wider range of situations and mediums.
Mm-hmm.
It's a compelling affirmation of the idea that varied experiences don't just add to a resume, they can fundamentally amplify one's unique abilities and exponentially expand the possibilities of where and how that talent can be applied, appreciated, and cherished by audiences. It speaks to the immense power and resilience of a non-linear career path in our ever-changing world.
What a truly illuminating deep dive into the fascinating chameleon-like career of Blaine Kapatch. We've journeyed from his early sketch comedy writing days with a legendary partner to commanding the stage of a popular game show, hyping up the wild worlds of wrestling and roller derby, even diving headfirst into a D&D podcast.
Quite the trip.
It's truly inspiring to witness such a diverse, sustained, and impactful career built on the bedrock of genuine humor and incredible adaptability.
This journey through Kapatch's career makes you wonder, doesn't it? In an age where specialization is so often championed and many are encouraged to focus on a singular niche, What unique, often underestimated advantages does a generalist or a versatile artist like Blaine Kapatch hold?
That's a great question.
What kind of unexpected doors, what rich, unforeseen opportunities might open for any of us if we simply allow our talents, our curiosity, and our courage to lead us down less conventional, more winding paths?
Something genuinely thought-provoking to mull over, for sure. We hope you thoroughly enjoyed this deep dive into the incredible, multifaceted world of Blaine Kapatch. We'll catch you next time.